Hi, this is Patrick Neiman of usabilitycounts.com. I'm with Greg Phillips, who is a information architect, all-around general technologist, and has this interesting new class that we're going to talk about tonight about teaching information architecture and mentoring people in that field. So, Greg, why don't you tell me a little bit about your background so that they know where people know where you're coming from?
Sure. I have a pretty varied background. I originally come from a software development background. I was a Visual Basic GUI designer and developer for various companies on Wall Street, as well as CNA Insurance in Chicago, and then moved out to California to start my own internet company with my best friend in 1996. And that was right around the time information architecture was starting to be looked at as a possible label for what it was that we do. But, you know, what happened for me was that I did this internet company for several years, poured blood, sweat, and tears into it, and then basically felt like I needed to get the hell out of technology. But after taking a break for a couple of years, I looked back and I thought, you know, it's not the technology that's the thing for me. I just don't like making it. I like creating and designing it and letting the people who are better at the developing and the visual design do their thing. And so fast forward to 2005, I moved down to Los Angeles and got a job as a senior information architect with Walt Disney Parks and Resorts Online. And that was, as far as I know, it's unheard of to basically start into the field at a senior level. And I think my software development background, but I also, you know, worked in business. I worked in education. I worked in entertainment. I worked in visual design. I was bringing a lot to the table. Now, after a couple of years of working in the field, I've decided that I want to start this program, what I call IA Basic Training, and is essentially taking people through the process from a senior level consultant's mindset, teaching what the different deliverables are, what they mean, why they're important in the specific steps in the process, and who uses them. And I'm finding it's just great fun for me because when I've been in all these different companies, I notice that managers have very little time to mentor their newbies and their new hires. Even people who are skilled but don't know the internal process require a little bit of training. They usually get up to snuff a lot faster. I just don't see that this is available to people through anything other than you know, the higher level education institutions like UCLA and Berkeley and whatnot. So I'm really excited to be offering this.
Yeah, and just so the audience knows, we had a previous call, and one of the things that me and Greg were talking about is that the whole, when people get to a company, it's almost like they're learning the process of that company from the ground up. There seems to be almost no standardization of, okay, what are the steps of doing this, even from a very basic level. And a lot of times when information architects jump into a job, they think that this jumping into the job means, oh, we're going to do sitemaps and wireframes, and that's what we're going to deliver. And there's never really an understanding of who the customer is, even before they get to that point. So a lot of times you're wireframing, and you're wireframing the product that you shouldn't be wireframing. You know, it's the quote that I use a lot, Henry Ford, if people ask me what they needed, or if I asked people what they needed, they would have said faster horses. And by understanding the users and their needs and going through the process, you get much better products.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I can't tell you how many times I've stepped into a situation where there's either been little or no requirements, and sometimes the requirements have been poorly focused, if you will, similar to the quote you just provided from Henry Ford. You know, I've had people say there has to be a search box in the upper right-hand corner. And it's like, okay, wait, first of all, what is the core need there? Okay, the user needs to be able to search the website. Okay, great. Doesn't really matter where it goes. Yes, there's usually a standard place, but it really doesn't matter where it goes. So it's kind of funny when you deal with that level, but I remember walking into a project and I was given three requirements. And I kind of was like, aren't there more? And they're like, no, that's it. And I'm like, okay, can I talk to somebody who has experience with this site? Very funny. So.
Yeah, no, it's just, you know, last consulting company I worked for, basically one of the people I was working with, she was at a client, and, you know, we both know who the client is, the one with the big mouse ears, and literally she had to practically tackle people to get requirements as they were walking down the hallway. So yeah. one of the things that was interesting about your background, and you're a little different than some of the other people that have lived in LA for quite a long time, is that you've had experience in both working for an internal agency, which is Disney, you know, and working for an external agency that's working with a multitude of clients, which is Razorfish. What were the benefits of working with in each environment?
It's a really good question. I loved working for both of them. Disney had, you know, because of the information architects that had already been there, so they've had some history there, they were really big on IA process, and I really liked that. Unfortunately, they were so big on overall process and methodology that many projects would take forever. And I kind of think that they end up spinning their wheels a lot and spending a lot more money than they need to. The one project that I was on, I know people were saying we could have done it in 6 to 9 months, but it took a year and a half plus. So that was the one downside of being so heavily devoted to needing to follow a certain set of things. I believe in IA we still have to follow a degree of process. But the other thing was in Razorfish, we could actually work really, really quickly, but there wasn't any IA process. I actually came in with my process, which I learned from WD Pro, and which was Disney Online. You know, so I was able to say, well, here's what I do, and I know you guys said we should do this and we should do this, but I need to do this extra step, and I need to do this one other thing. And they actually agreed. They thought they were good ideas, and we did them. It made the project last 2 weeks longer. So I figure for a 4-week project that turned into a 6-week project and the client was ecstatic about the design, I figured that extra 2 weeks was worth it just to get in a little bit more process there. So I think it's about balance of process. You don't want to be stuck in process so much so that nothing's moving and that you're slowed down because you're waiting for somebody over here to finish a vital piece. But you also need to respect, I think, that there is a process. And I think the value of a training and mentoring program like mine is that I'm wanting to teach people the mindset and the technical proficiency so that they can walk into a job and basically say, Mr. Client, Mrs. Client, this is how we do it, and this is how I'm going to recommend we do it. We can take this piece out if you like, or we can add this piece if you like, but this is the steps we need to take, and when we do this, it will be successful. And I think that that's an important piece, and I don't know that they get that from university classes, but...
Well, even though, I mean, like what you're talking about, I mean, one of the things that you mentioned was that, you know, working in an internal agency sometimes is so committed to the process, they're so guarded about it, it's that they don't realize there are certain steps that they could skip or do less research on because they know who the client is. They've already done the research. They've already been working for the company for a long time. And it's all about knowing what the steps in the process or what the rules are and then figuring out when to break them. And, you know, that's especially important in a company like, you know, when you're working on it for a Razorfish or a technology consultancy or something, because clients a lot of times never even want to pay for the process because all they care about is how do we get this product out the door, correct?
Right.
And so a lot of times you're in this rush, oh, my God, we have a deadline that's like a month out. And you're sitting there thinking, well, you know, the card sort, you know, we really don't quite need that as detailed as we normally would, for example.
Right. Yeah, and I think as in the IA UX world, I think we are really lucky because our process, most of the steps of the process are tied to a specific deliverable versus the world of software development. Quite often, you might have phase one deliverable might be something that nobody can see because it's back-end architecture. It's database design or something that's really not tangible. But our phases have deliverables at the end of most of them, you know, and I'm thinking like after I do discovery, which doesn't really have a deliverable, but after I do discovery, I move into what I call mapping, and that is either topic maps and site maps or just site maps. And then I move into, you know, conceptual design, pre-wireframing, and doing all the wireframing, and et cetera, et cetera. And each one of those has a deliverable. So I think it's great and very important for us to stick to process as much as possible because we have the tangible results to show the client. And in my experience, every time they've seen one of the deliverables and I've explained them, which is another thing, I'm teaching presentation skills of these as well. When I explain them, they go, oh, I get what we're doing, I see where we're going, then they can poke holes in it, they can add to it, whatever. It ends up being very collaborative, but I think things belong very nicely.
Yeah, no, I totally. One of the things that I think that's kind of interesting what you're talking about software development, this is one of the issues when we talk about user experience, it seems so undefined. You know, we sit here and can't even really agree on what the title should be.
Right.
Okay, is it an information architect, or is it user experience architect, or is it interface designer, or is it user interface engineer, or is it, you know, product
director, designer, yeah.
Web designer, jack of all trades. But what's interesting is that software development, even though their process is a lot of times very invisible, they seem to have this certain, oh yeah, we just build it and it comes out, and they get away with it. Whereas information architects, every step of our process, people are looking at it and going, you know, should we really be paying for that kind of thing?
Yeah. I always think that's funny, you know, as I don't know where I heard this, but I once heard a long time ago, when you plan to fail, you fail, when you fail to plan, you plan to fail.
Yeah.
And I think that's really true, and when I hear that somebody wants to skip over, say, annotations in the wireframes, I think to myself, well, for one, I tell them I don't think that's a very good idea, because the annotations are an integral part of the wireframe and do very seriously inform the software developer's work. The engineers need to know the functional specs on the wireframe. But I've done projects where they've said, no, we really don't think we need them. And I've been like, okay, good luck.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I've been on projects, and this is just the nightmare stories that we've heard, where like they didn't start doing wireframing or really detailed wireframing until 5 months after the project started. And a lot of it was just because the feature set kept changing. At one time it was just go build, and it was a kind of a labs environment where basically they just had to spend money. And it's really bad because one of the things that I stayed over and over again, and this is kind of a selling point to your class, for example, is that if you do proper user experience and you're really committed to doing it right, that a lot of times you can actually save money on the software development process. You know, talking about it I talk about the process with some people that work at agencies, for example. I say that the design and the UX part, you know, the UX and the web design, visual design part of the process should be about 25% of the cost of the project, and they just go nuts. Like, you've got to be kidding me. We're only spending 5%. But when you look at the tasks that all the other people are doing within the process, as far as, like, developers are going, well, geez, we forgot about this, so we have to think about this part of it. You know, we have to think about what happens here when they press this button. Everybody's doing information architecture. They just don't know it. And it still hits that 25% number. And a lot of times what happens is you end up spending more money, because there's all this backtracking of thinking, oh, what does this button do?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've never seen, well, maybe I've been lucky, but I've never been on a project where the IA role has not added value. It's always added value, and people have been, you know, because I come from software development, because I've had experience with visual design, because I've been a business owner, because I've had all these different hats in the past, I think I write pretty damn good annotations. And so when people read them, they start realizing, oh, like you were saying, we do need to answer what happens when somebody clicks that button, whatever. And the sooner we try and get an answer for that, the better everybody's going to be. I think it's going to save that money, like you're saying. And quite honestly, you know, what I love about teaching people and mentoring on a private level, which is what I'm doing, I'm not really holding a multi-student class structure. You know, if somebody's about to walk into a presentation and needs a pep talk and needs to, like, be reminded how important it is to be professional and the different tips that I give for that, they can call me. And that's, you know, you can't call your university professor for that. So, you know, I'm committed to helping people be really good IAs so that the clients out there get better and better work, you know, and we can get better websites ultimately.
Yeah. So you're telling me that you currently have 3 students enrolled in your program.
That's right.
What are the different skill levels that they're coming in at?
There are 3 different skill levels, actually, which I think is fascinating. When I came out with the program about 2-3 weeks ago, so it's a pretty new program, I thought, well, this is just going to be for brand new people who are entry level and want to break into the field, because that's how it happened. A friend of mine who definitely has the IA mindset, she thinks conceptually, she said, I would love for you to teach me. Will you do this? And it was her idea, actually. I have to give her credit for the idea. So she's totally entry level. Hardly done a little bit of IA, worked in product management, product design, more like physical products. So she's had to think conceptually about a lot of that, but she's never done sitemap or wireframe or anything like that. And laid out some brochures and is very visually oriented. So she's brand spanking new. I got another gal. She's been doing it for about a year, and Sword Caller Junior. She's wanting to expand her skill set and improve her marketability. She wants to feel more confidence and be more professional. She probably has pretty good technical skills from what I've seen so far, but we're working a lot on the confidence and professionalism. One of the big things for her has been presentation skills, and I have a special way of going through that. And then my other gal is senior level in another discipline in visual design. And she wants to break into the field but doesn't want to come in at an entry level. She wants to come in at a level higher than that. And I think she can do that. She just needs to learn the world of IA. And so she thought, this is a really good point, she thought my program was fantastic because she's got a kid who comes home around 3 o'clock, and so she's available during the daytime, and probably can't take university classes or go be out at night because she's got to take care of her daughter. So this program kind of fits her schedule perfectly.
So that's actually a really good point. I mean, one of the things I was talking about with a person that owns an agency that does user experience is, and this is a whole other topic that might be a whole other podcast, but one of the things that we have a lot of problem with in LA, especially in San Francisco, finding really good designers is hard. And I think one of the reasons that is because you have people like your student that you're talking about. She's really good at the visual design, but she wants to do something else. And I see a lot of designers, the very first thing they do is they migrate to other roles like being an IA, one, because it usually pays more, but two, there's a lot of aspects of being an IA that it's like having all the benefits of being a designer without having to push around pixels in Photoshop.
Right, or do all those nasty grids for doing a forms-based page or something. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because it's like, for example, like I used to be a designer, right? And, you know, I'm okay. You know, I can pump out a print design, did a brochure today, not a problem. But it's not where my passion is. And it's because I think part of it is, like, literally, you know what, I don't feel like changing it from blue to red one more time. And a lot of it, what's really good about a lot of IAs is it's the ideas behind the wireframes that's really important. I mean, anybody can pop open Visio and do a whole bunch of wireframes. But if you don't have the idea isn't sound, then... as my other phone rings, hold on for one sec. But if the idea isn't sound, then you're not going to go anywhere.
Right.
Right? So.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I actually feel a little bad for visual designers. I do know that they're paid less, and in a certain way, I guess because they were a dime a dozen for so many years, they kind of, I don't know, maybe the industry disses them a tad bit and they don't get the respect they deserve, but I love working with them, particularly when I'm approaching the wireframing stage. I want to involve them and help them have a sense of ownership and really kind of like, not battle it out, but just like collaborate and like trade ideas and say, well, what do you think about this? And here's what I was thinking here, and you know, what are you thinking about there? And I find that to be really dynamic and very inspirational in terms of my ultimate design. And I also then, you know, and this is something that I think, you know, people at your level and my level, we know we need to enroll the different team members in to the process. We need to enroll them into ownership of it. And the sooner I can enroll the visual designer into the process of how the wireframe is going to end up so that the comps and the wireframes sync up almost perfectly, the sooner I'm going to have like a powerful front in terms of working with the developers. Because if the visual designer and the IA can stand as a single front, quite often then we're able to push through the best user experience, but sometimes not. But you know, that's
actually a really good point, because a lot of times the IA tends to be the person that ties all the group together. They tie product management together with visual design and with development. And they're the people in the middle that really, if they do it right, they can be the hub to all the spokes.
Yeah. And I, you know, a lot of the job requisitions that I see from recruiters and whatnot, a lot of them are asking for that. And so, you know, I think we in the field need to be more conscious of that. We're not just pumping out wireframes and deliverables. And I know some people that's fine for them, and I've actually had a job or two where I've done that, and it's been fine too. You know,
yeah.
But at the end of the day, we are the hub and the wheel, and you know, I'm glad we get paid well for it, but would like to see companies kind of treat it more as an important part of the process.
Yep. Okay, so we're going to tie up this podcast. I have to go check if this recording actually went through. We've had a couple of false starts with that. This is Patrick Naiman. I was speaking with Greg Phillips, who runs a company called Clariscope. His email address is gp@clariscope.com. And he's offering a class where he can mentor you to be a better IA. So hope to catch you guys again. We're going to be doing these podcasts on a regular basis at usabilitycounts.com.